Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now celebrating 5 years of burning up the airwaves.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
You're listening to the voice of small business.
This is Dr. Fraser Crane. I'm listening.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, and I'm glad you're here. 800-531-3815, toll free coast to coast. And my website is www.jbsba.com. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a law firm in Washington, D.C. called McDermott, Will & Emery. And they're a pretty smart law firm. And I realized that when they hired my friend Andrew Sherman to be one of their partners, and that's when I found out how smart they were. Because any firm that wants Andrew Sherman to work for them, has got to have their stuff together. Andrew's a good friend of ours, a longtime member of our Brain Trust. He's an incredibly prolific author on books that small business owners can use. And the last one that I have in my hand that he wrote is called Fast Track Business Growth: Smart Strategies to Grow Without Getting Derailed. Andrew Sherman, welcome back.
Thank you, and I can only hope that the chairman of our firm and its compensation committee are listening this morning.
Oh, I've already sent them the memo.
I would have gotten a bulletin out had I known that your intro was going to be on focus that way. Thank you very much.
Well, I mean it, and I have sent them a memo. Of course, I hang out with your guy up there a lot, and so.
Well, the part of entrepreneurship I sometimes miss is, I'd like to put in a good word for you similarly, except I'm talking to the boss.
Well, it's good to have you here, Andrew. And one of the things I know you want to talk about today is the issue, the corporate malfeasance issues, the situation in the marketplace, especially the public sector marketplace, that led up to culminating in a bill. I shouldn't say culminating because there are a lot of things that came after that, but led up to a bill called Sarbanes-Oxley, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, and some new stuff, some new accounting oversight that's going on right now. And so why don't you set the stage for us and tell us a little bit of, remind us, I guess I should say, because we have, most of us know about a lot of this, remind us about what led up to Sarbanes-Oxley.
Okay, well, everybody sit back in their armchair or get comfortable in your driving seat because there's a couple minutes of history here, but we'll try and keep it very, very efficient. Everyone knows that in the late 90s, we had a sort of three monkeys scenario in the markets. See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. No one wanted to deal with bad news. Everybody was having a good time. The glee in the public markets spilled down to the private equity markets, and everybody was at the party.
Monopoly money everywhere.
That's right. There was monopoly money everywhere.
And the laws of economics were suspended.
Exactly. As I said, if you were an entrepreneur in 98, 99, and you didn't have a good year, something was seriously wrong. So, you know, the pendulum, of course, swung the other way, and all of the abuses during that party, if you will, came out and came into the headlines. And the media, who actually had fallen in love in 98, 99 with reporting good stories and upbeat stories, went the other way, and suddenly we had the Enrons and the Tycos and the WorldComs and even the AOLs and other, you know, accounting problems and merger problems and all types of crises. In some cases, you know, Adelphia, I mean, dragging out Mr. Regas, 77 mm-hmm. years old,
and his sons,
you know, and his sons, very powerful media messages. And what that led to, I believe, is a real crisis in confidence in our, you know, corporate leadership, and Congress feeling political pressure to do something about that crisis in confidence, moved very quickly, to their credit, though some say hastily, in passing Sarbanes-Oxley in July of last year.
I'm going to say they knee-jerked to Sarbanes-Oxley.
I think that's a very good adjective. I mean, I think, or verb. I mean, depending on how you mm-hmm. want, a knee-jerk could be an adjective or a verb, I suppose. But the point being that they moved very quickly. Anytime Congress moves very quickly, they're likely to leave holes. I was talking to a corporate executive the other day, and he said, holes? He said, they left Moab-like craters in this legislation. And here we have corporate America. It's August 1st. You're the CFO of a publicly held company. You're supposed to be complying with this new sweeping legislation, and you've got, you know, 100 more questions than you have answers. And so really where we could take it from there is, you know, sort of what's happened since July, what holes have been attempted to be filled, and then the topic I really want to make sure we talk about in the second part of our half hour is, if you're a small business owner or entrepreneur listening today, why should you be concerned about these things? You know, how do they trickle down or have an indirect effect on your business?
Well, I think that's an important point, and I appreciate you helping us make that today, that we small business owners need to realize that either, if not directly, certainly indirectly, Sarbanes-Oxley is affecting us, will affect us. And we're going to talk about this a little bit more right after these messages. It's 20 till. Andrew Sherman is our guest. His new book is called Fast Track Business Growth. Andrew J. Sherman. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 17 till. Let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, Joan Pryde, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, will be with us, and I'll tell you about the rest of the week a little bit later on. My website is www.jbsba.com. Check it out when you get a chance. And the article in my newsletter this week is called The New Web Architecture for the 21st Century, and it's about some ways that you need to think about how to structure your websites, and based on some information that I've received recently. And you still have a chance to get that if you subscribe this week. And that's at jbsba.com. Andrew Sherman is our guest. He's the author of Fast Track Business Growth and a number of other books. I had a little tendonitis in my elbow, folks, so I wasn't able to drag all of Andrew's books over here. But I do want to remind you of one other one, and that's franchising and licensing. It is the Bible on franchising and licensing, and I certainly recommend that one to you. It's been out a while, but I'm sure it's still available, Andrew.
Well, I got some news on that one, Jim. I don't know if I shared it with you last time, but that book is probably the best-selling book on franchising that's been written, which I'm kind of proud of.
Absolutely.
Here. But more importantly, I've been working on what will be the third edition of the book.
All right.
And it'll be out sometime next year. I've got the manuscript due to the publisher in 2 weeks, and in fact, as I sit at my home office desk here, I'm staring at about 3 feet of paper that needs to somehow find its way to our publisher in 2 weeks.
Well, it is the best, folks. And as you've heard me say before, let's all say it together: no chopped liver on the Small Business Advocate Show.
Well, speaking of that, real quick, you got to promise me you'll say hello to Joan Pryde.
Oh, I will.
At the top of the hour.
I will. No problem. That'll be, you're right. She's not chopped liver either. She'll be up in a little bit. Andrew, Sarbanes-Oxley, I wrote a little piece about this a few months ago, and the thing I pointed out is that I estimated that there were about a dozen or so companies that had really violated our trust, and I'm sure there may be more than that, but the ones that really kind of that were up on the radar screen did the most damage. I'm talking about, you know, tens of billions of dollars in damage. And more than that in terms of that, and that was just direct balance sheet numbers. More than that in terms of a personal wealth, personal equity, was about a dozen or so. And if you do the math on that, that was 0.8% of all public companies. So in my opinion, Sarbanes-Oxley was a reaction to the drama and not to the numbers.
Yeah, I think you're raising some very interesting points there. I mean, if you look at the study, if you were to study the history of most legislation in America, I'd say a lot of that legislation is trying to fix the problems of the few by affecting the many. It would mm-hmm. be like an outbreak of a disease that affects 100 people in the United States, but everybody goes for the vaccine.
We all have to get inoculated, yeah.
That's right. And so the philosophical question is, could all of us have used that shot in the arm? And I think in this case, probably yes, because even though maybe only 12 companies have surfaced that were violating, there were a lot of companies that were at the party. Now, what mm-hmm. they did wrong or how much they did wrong or whether they did wrong at all, I think it remains to be seen. Now, I'm not a big fan of over-governing, as you know, or over-regulating corporate governance. And the weird part about Sarbanes-Oxley is, and most people don't even realize this, there was very little new legally that they introduced into
right.
this bill. It was really a restatement of existing corporate law in many, many ways. What they did is add all these burdensome procedures and filings and certifications, and you know the procedural steps that they added are going to cost the average public company $500,000 to $1 million a year in new professional fees. And to that extent, it was like a lawyers and accountants relief act, and we all celebrated. But the point being that the things that they reiterated among the duties of care that directors have been around on the corporate books for 100 years. I mean, they really have, and that's what made the legislation so ironic is that, you know, Congress rushed to fix a problem, and what they really did was remind everybody that the basic premise, which is boards of directors owe their fiduciary duties to the shareholders and not to their own golf club memberships.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's almost as simple as that.
Well, give us Sarbanes-Oxley in a nutshell, and then talk to us about how it affects directly or indirectly small businesses.
Well, I think in a nutshell, it's designed to create fail-safes, if you will, to make sure that the board of directors and the officers of the company and the CFO and the outside auditors are all doing their job. I mean, it'd be difficult to really drill into legislation in the time that we have, but the procedural steps of going through and certifying statements and getting information out into the public quicker than before, and raising the level of penalties that are there if there's violations. Those are all things designed, again, to encourage compliance.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I think it's important for our listeners to pay attention is that if you, again, study the relationship between big corporate America and small corporate America tends to mimic the best practices over time of big corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
And so I believe that small companies and larger privately held companies ought to pay careful attention to what these new best practices are, because you're going to see a pressure to adopt those best practices by a number of different important constituents. And, we can run through what those different constituent groups are.
One would be banks.
Banks, absolutely.
That's the closest one. That's the most direct, probably, that small business owners, banks and their accounting firms, that's the closest small business owners will get to being affected by Sarbanes-Oxley.
I think there's even more than that. We can, as I said, talk about those after the break. I got a list of about 7 or 8.
Okay. We'll have that list for you, folks, right after these messages. It's 10 till. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with our good friend, Andrew Sherman, the author of Fast Track Business Growth and a number of other outstanding books that you can find. You can see a list of that if you go to Amazon or any of the online stores and pick one out, and I know you'll like it. Stand by. We'll be right back. We're back. 7 till. Got a lot left to talk about with our good friend Andrew Sherman. Andrew, your law firm is McDermott, Will & Emery.
That's correct.
Is there a website?
MWE.com.
Okay, check it out if you get a chance. And tell us specifically, Andrew, in your practice, what you work with.
I spend a lot of my time in two primary areas, and we've spoken on some of these areas in prior shows. Corporate transactional, which is anything relating to mergers and acquisitions, capital formation, general kind of business growth issues. And then the area that I'm relatively well known for is the leveraging and harvesting of intellectual capital through things like franchising, licensing, and joint ventures. So, any type of business growth strategy, those are the areas that we really enjoy working with clients to help implement.
Right. And so check them out. Give us the website again.
www.mwe.com, and that goes into all of our different practice groups and the areas that we've got about 1,000 lawyers worldwide, and would love to help out.
And if they wanted to contact you directly and talk to you about an assignment, how would they do that?
You could email me at ajsherman@mwe.com, or if you just hit the general website, go to the bios page. There's all of my contact information.
All right. Check that out, if folks would like to talk to Andrew. All right, you were going to give us a list of about 6 or 7 ways that Sarbanes-Oxley affects us directly in small business.
Yeah, I'm going to tick through these kind of quickly, since it is 5 of 8, at least on the East Coast. And As always, if we need to drill into these in a follow-on show, it seems like every time at 5-0, we've got good topics for the next one.
Right.
Because all of these could be discussed really in detail. But I think that the following, if you're a small business owner, here's some reasons why you really need to pay attention to what's going on out there. The first one we mentioned before the break was commercial lenders.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to a number of commercial lenders, and they're already saying that they're going to be putting Sarbanes-like, as they called it, Sarbanes-like covenants into their loan documents.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see good governance practices as a condition to making loans or as a condition to loan defaults.
It'll probably show up in the covenants section, won't it?
Absolutely. It'll be in the covenants section. It'll probably be in the commitment letter.
I just wanted you to know about that, folks. If you know, there's so many things that you don't want to read, but one of the sections you got to read when you especially if you have any kind of a reasonably sophisticated lending relationship with your bank, make sure you read those covenants.
Absolutely, and again, don't be surprised if you start seeing provisions in those term sheets and commitment letters that force you to comply with Sarbanes-Oxley.
Right. Right.
Your initial response, I'm sure, is going to be, but I'm not a big publicly held company.
Right.
The banks don't care.
That's right.
Same thing goes with insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Spent some time earlier this week with a guy who does a lot of D&O insurance, director and officer liability
mm-hmm.
insurance, for privately held companies, and he said his underwriters are starting to ask for Sarbanes-Oxley-like conditions to underwriting insurance.
But being a board member is no cakewalk anymore, is it?
Not only is it no cakewalk, but I think if I'm a small company and I'm trying, as we've talked about on prior shows, I'm trying to recruit some new board members and get myself looking good in preparation for the capital formation process, small companies are having a heck of a time recruiting qualified board members.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants the burden
mm-hmm.
Because the prices, the risks are a lot higher.
Mm-hmm.
So recruiting good board members is going to have a trickle-down impact. Venture capitalists are starting to have Sarbanes-Oxley things trickle into their term sheets.
Mm-hmm.
Employees are starting to demand better governance as a condition for staying at a company or being at a company or coming on board. You know, I've even heard employees, you know, middle-level managers, senior executives say, hey, show me your governance procedures. Show me that you're going to be looking out. I don't want to work for the next Enron.
So whenever some of these companies are interviewing people who are going to wind up being officers and are going to potentially be in a position to be arrested for some of the things that they're
precisely.
Doing.
Precisely.
In the interview, they're going to say, tell me how you're going to protect me.
I mean, wouldn't you, Jim? If I called
absolutely.
You tomorrow and said, come on, be a senior vice president of my company, with everything you know that's going on out there, wouldn't you ask those
questions? No question about it. And, in fact, what you're going to have to do, the smart companies are going to have to put that on the table themselves. This is what we're going to do to make sure that you don't get yourself in a bind.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be part of that. Nobody.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you know, it trickles down. This is a pretty complex topic, maybe for another time, but it trickles down even into mergers and acquisitions,
mm-hmm.
where companies want to see that the company they're buying
right.
has clean books and records and governance practices so that they're not buying into that company's problems.
An example that many of us saw a few years ago, Andrew, was that a lot of our vendors, a lot of our customers were requiring us small vendors to be Y2K compliant. They sent us letters and said, you know, we're going to expect you to be compliant or we're not going to do business with you. And so that was kind of an introduction to what you're talking about now. And I do want you to come back another day soon and let's talk about this some more, because I do think we need to break this down a little bit more and help small business owners understand how it's going to be affecting them.
Thank you for
being here, Andrew. Andrew Sherman, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back another day. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. I'll see you in a few minutes.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.